Hello, welcome to another episode of The High Ground, powered by Premier Companies. Jeff, how are you today?
I'm good, Sal. How are you?
I'm doing outstanding.
Who do we have today?
We have two guests joining
us. Two guests,
okay. Remotely, and if you're watching on YouTube, we probably look like the Brady Bunch here, but we have got Glenda Gale. Thank you, Glenda, and we're going to do introductions here.
That one.
How does that work? And then we got Emily Message, Dr. Emily Message, and both with FGI, Forage Genetics International. But before we get started, most important thing is the question of the day.
That's the reason everybody comes here. Yep. Question of the day.
And we gave them a softball question. Are you a dog person or a cat person? And what is your favorite breed of dog? I don't think there is a breed of cat. Is there just...
Yes, there's breeds of cats.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Come on, Sal.
Give us a time, Sal.
Well, that's colors. It's like black cat, white cat.
No.
There's like Siamese cats.
Yeah. Oh, that's, yeah. So there's three. Yeah. Okay.
What's the hairless cat? There's a cat that doesn't have hair. I don't know what it's called.
Do we get to guess what Sal is?
Ugly cat. We'll let Glenda go first. Glenda, are you a dog or a cat person?
All right. I am a dog person. But what is so funny is that I finally have been allowed by my family to get the dog that the breed that I love, which is a corgi. And my kids say that it's the most cat-like dog they've ever seen. So I think I can say them both.
So it doesn't listen to you or anything?
Oh, no. She does her own thing. Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's not like the labs that we used to have. So, yeah. Really different breed of dog.
A corgi.
Lots of fun.
Hey, you guys have to see if you can find some pictures. We'll get some pictures flashed up there on the... We can do that.
Okay. I'm going to look. Yeah. It's like, you know, now that my kids are out of the house, it's like my child, right? Become one of those people.
Oh, gosh. Emily.
Just wait, Sal.
Oh, don't tell me. I'll have anxiety. I'll break out in cold sweats here. Emily, are you a cat person or a dog person?
I am definitely a dog person, 100%. Although I will say that my daughters each have a cat. So I've got two cats that love to make appearances on my meetings at the most opportune times. I would not be surprised if they didn't jump up, you know, during this interview today. So
you should have set that up right there. Have a cat.
Well, they're sleeping right now. So we will see if they wake up.
And what breed of dog? What kind?
It's hard to pick. So I would say border collie is where I generally go. I've got a border collie right now, but I also love my mutts. So, yeah. I mean, I can go either way. I've had great of both breeds. I will tell you one thing that I've discovered. I am not. We recently got a golden retriever last year. So he's a 1 year old, 100 plus pound, just puppy. Crazy, happy go lucky dog that thinks he's a lap dog. And golden retrievers are a little bit different to train than a border collie. So I think this will be our one and only golden.
What all has he retrieved? What all has he brought back?
Like, what has he destroyed?
All the 50-foot garden hoses are now like...
Oh, my boots?
Yeah.
He's really good at hiding things. I'm not sure how many things he's brought me, but he's taken things from me.
Nice. Nice.
Jeff?
I was always an Australian Shepherd guy, but several years ago, my wife wanted a standard size Schnauzer.
They're big, aren't they?
They're medium.
Okay.
But great dog. We've had one. We've had a great experience with one of them, so I'm assuming all Schnauzers are good. But so I do like the Schnauzer. She's been a good dog.
Good deal. In the house dog?
She is in the house. She loves to go to the barn now. She's at heart. She's a farm dog.
Yep. I think all dogs are farm dogs, but they had their choice. Well, I'm a dog person too. And so I guess the cat people will probably get hate mail for that. But so I'm a dog person too. Probably the favorite breed is labs. Always had good luck with labs. Although, interestingly enough, Emily, my daughter wanted a golden retriever. So we have a golden retriever, and they could tell my wife and daughter could probably tell you what day the birthday falls on, but probably more of a retriever than my lab retrievers, because it has drug up. I have an outdoor wood boiler down. It's probably about 100 yards from the house, and it's down a hill, and it drags up all the biggest pieces of firewood that it can drag.
You need a fireplace.
Well, I've got one up there, but
Well, the dog's bringing wood to you.
Helping. Yeah.
That's a well-trained dog.
It brought a root ball that was like the size of a basketball. I don't know what it came off of, but it drug that up into the yard. So I grabbed it and I yelled at both of them and I threw it.
And they brought it back.
And they brought it right back. Yep.
So. We're playing games.
We need to train Sal. Yeah, we need to train Sal. That's what a retriever does.
Yeah. Well, it has been over a year, I think, or right at a year since we had Dr. Message on with us. But let's do introductions first. So, Glenda, you want to start off and tell us, introduce kind of yourself and your career path. And you've got several responsibilities. And I won't even try to fill them all in, but let's just do introductions first.
Yeah, yeah, would love to. So obviously, Glenda Gale, I have been with Land O'Lakes now for just over 13 years. My current role is president of FGI, and then I also lead all of the R&D efforts for the crop inputs business. So real quick on my background and my career path, I started in the industry as a dairy producer. And then as my husband and I decided we wanted to get out of that piece of the business, I moved over into Monsanto. And back when they used to actually have a dairy business, I sold Poslac, which is BST. And then, of course, they doubled down on the crop input side of the business. And at that point is when I moved into crop inputs. And that's actually when I met you, Sal, how many years ago?
I didn't think it was 13. It didn't sound like that. Gosh.
Yeah. Oh gosh. I know, right? We're getting old. I think we're getting old. So then I moved to Ohio, worked with multiple different cooperatives and other ag retailers with the Monsanto business in Ohio, and absolutely loved the cooperative system and made the move over to Winfield, about 11 years ago now, and stayed in that role for a while in Ohio, and then had the opportunity to combine both my dairy and my crop inputs experience in member relations, and moved back closer to home in Wisconsin, very close to the corporate office here at Land O'Lakes. And 2.5 years ago, I got the privilege of moving over into leading FGI. So I've been doing that now, obviously, for 2.5 years. And then about 1.5 years ago, added all of the R&D efforts in as well. So that does include our innovation center in River Falls. It includes our Answerplot crews, our agronomic data and insights team. And last but not least, our SureTech lab. So I've got a great team of folks that I work with, and it really is a privilege to work with all these folks, including Emily.
Busy lady. I tell you, it's so much simpler back whenever we were co-workers.
Yeah,
we were
just selling stuff. Yeah.
It was easy.
It was easy.
Yeah. Well, Emily or Dr. Message, you've been with the company now, I know, for probably 1 year and 1 month. Is that about right? 1 year and 2 months.
Yeah, I started. Because
you had just,
you caught me.
You had just started. I think you've been on board for about 1 month or so before when you was on the last time. So
in this role, yes, yep. Absolutely. So very fortunate. You know, I've been actually with Forage Genetics now for 5 years total, but I did just take on the role of managing Forage Genetics last September. And now I'm in the role of director of R&D and innovation at Forage Genetics. So that's fairly recent change as well. Get to lead our team of brilliant scientists, technicians, agronomists, working on alfalfa. Before coming to FGI in 2019, I was the extension forage specialist at Montana State University for 5 years. So there I got to work on anything that could be fed to an animal, annual perennials, alfalfa, grasses. It was a really great opportunity to see a different landscape. I grew up in North Central Pennsylvania, had done my most of my degrees, in the Northeast, in the Midwest. And so the West was definitely a different environment and really appreciated that, but decided ultimately to move back to Pennsylvania in 2019 and took a role as a technical support specialist with Forage Genetics. So helping our sales and marketing team before moving into the product and development manager role for about 1 year. And then, of course, moving in to lead the R&D team. So not quite as varied of an experience as Glenda has had, but feel very fortunate, to have worked both in academia as well as now industry and getting back to kind of my roots in R&D here.
Well, back to Forage Genetics. Glenda, what is Forage Genetics International? So tell us what that is and how it came about. And
it certainly
sounds like a pretty big deal.
Yeah, absolutely. So Forgenex International is a wholly owned subsidiary of Land O'Lakes. So it is a piece of the organization that was started just over 30 years ago with the vision from our founder, Mark McCaslin, Dr. Mark McCaslin. And he really saw that our system, our cooperative system, could be the best in alfalfa and forages, and had a vision of taking that across the country and then ultimately globally. So it is just a privilege to be able to work with this team that has been built and under the vision that Mark had and Mike Vandelat had as well, to really think about how we could be the experts in the forage space and be truly basic manufacturers and breeding in that space. So that is where it started. We've had a lot of twists and turns in those 30 years, but ultimately the mission of FGI is really to support all of the farmers out there that are growing forages for their animals and continue to bring the best technology and genetics into the market.
Wow.
It's, I think of, a lot of our audience will understand a lot of the, changes that we've seen in production agriculture when it comes to corn. We've seen everything from the Roundup Ready crops to the BTs and stuff like that. They may not be quite as familiar with some of the changes that have come out in forage crops, specifically alfalfa. So if you look back at alfalfa for the last 10, 20 years, I'll let you guys pick the date range. What are some of the biggest changes you've seen to either one of you?
Emily, I'll let you take that one.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's apparent with corn and soybean, we've seen these huge changes in the industry and some huge advancements, but we've also seen a lot of advancements in alfalfa too. And it's really interesting, my breeder, Dr. Shufeng Ma and I, we were chatting the other day and we were looking at some of the data. And truly, when we look at the percent yield advancements that we've seen in alfalfa, it actually does mirror a lot of the other crops that are commonly used. So it's exciting when we're thinking about, okay, what led us there? What are the improvements that we've seen? And of course, we've got our high quality conventional products where we've seen significant improvements in disease resistance. We have a new package called UltraCut or AA, which with that package, we have increased resistance to things like aphanomyces or anthracnose, which are economically important diseases in alfalfa. Of the other two big ones that come to mind are our Roundup Ready alfalfa. Of course, that's a huge tool in the toolbox for a lot of growers in terms of how we can manage weed pressure, which can ultimately result in improvements in overall forage quality. And then our Harb Extra trait as well, which this is a genetically modified plant which has decreased lignin production. This results in increased overall fiber digestibility. So, the consuming animal is going to have access to more of that fiber, more of those nutrients in that plant then to utilize. And all of these products, we sell through our brands, through the Cropland brand, and also we broadly license as well throughout the industry. So that they are easily accessible to growers across, the U.S. and internationally.
Yeah, I guess you talk about licensing that tech, that technology or those, the genetics, the alfalfa genetics. Is where do you guys, how am I trying to ask this question? Of all the plant breeders out there, where do you guys rank in terms of who's the leader in forages, maybe specifically alfalfa?
Is legal going to listen to this question?
Is legal? Nah, yeah. We've only got a few subscribers. They'll probably never hear this.
Beers later. Yeah. Okay, fine. So I'm happy to take a swing at this, and Emily can add in. So I think that as I was talking about the start of FGI, and we have had just world class breeders in our program since day one. And that is one thing that Dr. McCaslin was absolutely just adamant about, right? And so with that, and then also with some other folks making a decision to exit the market, there was Corteva, for instance. We actually had great partnerships with them from a breeding specific testing and learning and that type of thing, but they've decided to exit the market, right? So as we think about the other players in this landscape, frankly, no one holds a candle to what FGI has. You know, we are the only ones that are making significant investments in R&D annually when it comes to the advancements around what Emily just talked about, around all these different diseases, all these different biotechnology traits. Of course that we do, we welcome competition in the market, but when we look at the trials and the data as proof points of how our breeding program is working in comparison to others, I don't think anyone else holds a candle. No, Emily, what your comments would be on that?
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I mean, not only do we have just fantastic breeders, fantastic staff. I mean, we've got, you know, people that are experts in subject matter areas. You know, we just hired recently earlier this year, Dr. Amanda Pommenville, who is a nematologist, so that we can, you know, make sure that we have the appropriate screening protocols, that we're looking at the right, you know, soil-borne nematodes that are going to be impacting our germplasm. We also just recently hired an entomologist, Dr. Erica Rodbell. Both of them are at our Nampa, Idaho research location. Again, just making sure that we're staying at the forefront of what growers are facing in the field. And then on top of that, when we just look at our R&D system internally within FGI, we've got over 200 acres dedicated just to alfalfa research and over 30 employees that are dedicated, again, just to alfalfa research. And a number that always, you know, it surprised me the first time that I heard it. It surprises a lot of people when they hear it. Each year, we put in over 300,000 plants into the ground for evaluation, and we whittle that down to, you know, the varieties that we then release commercially. And so we make sure that when we're releasing a variety, it's the best of the best, and it's going to perform the way that we say it will.
Wow. What locations? I mean, I think y'all are in River Falls. I mean, that's what I think of, but you mentioned, mm-hmm. you said Idaho. I mean, where are the research locations at?
So I consider our two kind of main locations, if you will, would be West Salem, Wisconsin, and then Nampa, Idaho. But then we also have locations in Mount Joy, Pennsylvania, Garden City, Kansas, and then in Southern California. There's a couple locations that we kind of group together that are across California, Arizona, New Mexico. But on top of that, we also have some satellite locations. So we've got another location in Idaho. We've got a couple locations in Wisconsin, in Minnesota. And then on top of that, we partner with a lot of research groups with, you know, different universities, with USDA groups across the country. I recently, you know, created a map kind of looking at where we're collaborating. And we've got 20 plus different locations across the U.S. where we have our germplasm, you know, in these trials, evaluating different things from salt tolerance to management, you know, harvest management, foliar application of fertilizers, that sort of thing. So we're really making sure that, you know, we get data from all these different environments and geographies across the U.S.
Okay, I need you guys to be honest on this question. In the middle of winter, do you find reasons to go to Southern California?
And can
I wish I had more reasons.
Can Jeff and I be like an assistant?
We should do a podcast from the Southern California Research Center about mid-January. So that's I'm guessing that climate's a little
bit. Do some plant evaluation at that point.
I think that we could probably find some work for you down there. Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
We don't really want a lot of manual work because, you know, it's Sal. So,
I may not be able to help you with that one.
Jeff forgets we're like sitting across the desk right now.
You can kick him.
Yeah.
Haven't seen anything flying yet.
Yeah. He's going to throw his cat at me, I think. So, yeah.
Barn cat. What we got in our trade territory at Premier Ag, we've got mostly corn and soybeans, and we have some wheat, mostly cover crop wheat, right? But it is corn and soybeans, but we have a lot of livestock. What if a grower's never planted or thinking about, we have a customer that's never planted alfalfa before. I mean, why should they consider doing that now? I guess that's probably a Glenda question, I think. I don't know, but why would a grower think about alfalfa instead of maybe their normal hay crop or maybe even as a rotation crop?
Yeah, I can start and I'll let Emily add because we both have a lot of passion around this. You know, I think there's 101 reasons to think about alfalfa in the rotation. And I think a couple of key ones in particular in your area, when we start to think about where we're at today in the commodity cycle, right? And we all know that this coming year is going to be a more difficult one for all of our growers and producers, right? As you think about alternatives to what their traditional rotation is, I think alfalfa makes a ton of sense, especially when you're thinking about row crop farmers that might be in an area where there are livestock producers that would be interested in purchasing the crop, right? I think there could be some real advantages to that, right? Especially because right now, when you look at the USDA data and you see the viability and the margins that are in the livestock business right now versus the row crop business, right? It's a really interesting mix. But thinking about, and this might seem wild to some folks, but thinking about maybe trading out some of your soybeans in rotation into alfalfa, right? There is some really amazing benefits that can come from having alfalfa in that rotation outside of just the traditional corn and beans, or just corn back to corn back to corn, right? And we all have been talking about all of the soil health benefits. We all know, I think you all are very, very committed to sustainability and the Truterra program and all of the things that go along with that. There are a ton of sustainability benefits from adding alfalfa into your crop as well. I know Emily's probably can give us a little bit more specifics around those exact measurements and those benefits. I'll maybe let her add in.
Yeah, and I won't bring my soapbox out for this conversation, but I've definitely got one here. But I mean, you know, Glenda hit on a lot of the big reasons why we should start thinking more about alfalfa, especially in these kind of row crop situations. And there's so many different things that it has to offer. But I think even let's focus on how it can benefit your system, that your cash crop, right? I mean, we've got issues with, say, corn rootworm. Well, alfalfa is not a host to those sort of pests. And so including that into your rotation can help decrease that pest pressure and help alleviate any negative impacts that it has on your corn. On top of that, you know, you're going to get that constant ground cover because it's a perennial. You're going to get the nitrogen credits. Also, with the deep tap roots of alfalfa, it's going to help in terms of that nutrient mobility and water mobility throughout the soil. So helping improving that soil tilth, the soil nutrients that are then available to your cash crop, to that corn crop. We actually had a tagline on one of the fact sheets that we put out there that was saying, rotate your alfalfa, replenish your corn. Because it does, you don't have to keep alfalfa in for 4 or 5 years. You can keep it as a short-term crop, and you're still going to have a lot of these benefits on that following corn crop. Not to mention then, of course, you're diversifying your portfolio, like Glenda alluded to. You're creating a really nutrient-dense feedstuff for livestock. I mean, there's a lot of different benefits. And then when you really start going down that sustainability track and thinking about what programs are available, and if we're looking to maybe diversify in terms of financial programs that we have access to, you know, NRCS has a new program out this year, nationwide this year, I should say, where they're actually incentivizing farmers offering around $60 per acre to include alfalfa in your rotations. Hmm. That's just by including alfalfa in a rotation when it hasn't been before. So I think that there's a lot of exciting things that are happening in the industry that are, you know, really finally starting to recognize all the benefits that alfalfa has to offer. But again, thinking in the context of how it can benefit really, truly what you're trying to do on a year-to-year basis, which might be in your area growing corn, you know, how can alfalfa complement that? And I think there's a multitude of ways.
You know, Jeff, that's something I kind of light went on here. We've got cattle, and, you know, we'll have another podcast with talking about how strong the beef market is right now. Yeah. And I don't think our farmers have ever considered.
You know, I think in the southern Indiana market, you know, outside of the dairy guys, you know, it seems like the alfalfa was confined to, well, we've got a small patch of alfalfa over here, and they get a good stand, and then they try to make it last for 10 years, and you're out there and they're talking about their alfalfa patch, and you're going, yeah, I see a plant about every 4 feet. And so, you know, I think in the past there's just been, you know, a lack of management that went into alfalfa. Maybe there wasn't a lot of people that were good, but it sounds like you've got a lot of resources that you talked about the answer plots. You know, I think some of these are, you know, local agronomists and salespeople that we have on staff have that opportunity to be more well-versed in that, mm-hmm. and can help these guys manage these alfalfa patches, and could add a lot more productivity to, you know, for the beef cattle market.
I think of alfalfa similar to a beef cow, similar to a dairy cow, right? You're going to get out of it what you put into it. And so we've got the genetics, we've got the products that if you optimize your management, you're going to get, you know, an acre that performs, and not just while that alfalfa is in, but even after that alfalfa is taken out. And you're right. So many people kind of, you know, they put the alfalfa in and then it's an afterthought. It's there. They don't really manage it. Maybe they don't even fertilize it. And they just harvest it, and 5-10 years down the road, you might have one alfalfa plant per 10 square feet even. I've been in a few of those fields, right? But truly, if you're looking for something that, I obviously am a little biased here, but it has a lot to offer from the animal to the soil, alfalfa is a really great option.
What do you say to the, you know, you'll have the old farmer out there and he'll say, well, my cows, they don't need alfalfa. That's just too rich for them. How do you answer that question?
I was very sure they're feeding cows and not dogs, because I haven't met a cow that doesn't want alfalfa. But truly, I mean, alfalfa we know is a highly palatable forage, right? I mean, I've seen many a cow get out of their pasture and end up in the alfalfa fields, and it didn't look like they were too upset about it. And horses too. I mean, horses love alfalfa. We did a weight loss study during my PhD, and we had one horse on there that was only fed alfalfa, part of why it was obese, refused for 2 weeks to eat grass hay. Like, I thought that this horse was, you know, going to keel over. It didn't, thankfully. But we know that alfalfa is very, very palatable. And so I don't think getting animals to eat alfalfa is a bad thing. Now, maybe what you're talking about or alluding to there is, you know, if it's too rich or too dense in nutrients. But really, even if you're talking about, you know, backgrounding animals, lactating animals, we want them to have that higher energy intake, right? And so this is a perfect source for that. And it has the physical benefits, that higher fiber, the scratch factor, all of the things that come along with feeding a nutrient-dense legume.
Well, it sounds like you guys got the information to help people manage through that. So that's good. And that's something I think that, you know, our salespeople and agronomists can help with. So anybody out there that's thinking about putting in alfalfa or wanting to go to a higher level of management, we can offer that.
I tell you, this has been a good podcast, because I think a lot of times in row crops, when it gets tough, we just hunker down. Right. Mm-hmm. And we talk about growing more bushels. That's just how can we get more? And that's our solution. But this may be a really viable, and we definitely have a market.
You like equipment, Sal? Maybe you ought to, you know, buy
there,
a baler.
There you go. I need an excuse to drag something else home.
Yeah.
Sal will be busy this summer. He's baling hay.
Well, we have covered a lot of ground here today, and certainly just really appreciate y'all joining us today. And I know whenever I looked at the, you know, when we had Dr. Message on last, and I was thinking, I was like, you know what? I wonder if Glenda could join too, and that'd be a really great podcast. So we appreciate you all joining us, and we're definitely going to send our account manager some information about
absolutely
presenting alfalfa as an alternative crop. And because I think that there would be I think we may have some growers that might take us up on that.
I think so too.
And I can buy a baler.
And Sal can buy a baler. That's he likes right. equipment.
Win, win, win.
If you need an excuse.
Glenda and Emily, thank you so much for joining us today. And we appreciate the partnership, and appreciate all the work you're doing with FGI.
Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you.
Right. Well, that's another episode of The High Ground, powered by Premier Companies. Thank you all very much.